Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined today by Jen, who's here to give us an update from Cantalumba. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Anna. Thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, thanks for being here. How about you jump in with the update? Fill us in.
Yeah, let's do it, shall we? So, as promised, really, I was just thinking today, especially this time of year, because this would be the time of year where we'd really be getting knee-deep into bridgewalk season, where we'd be starting to really look at, you know, what's going on in Africa and get our annual updates and hearing from folks and all of that, which is not to say that we're not endeavoring to get folks, you know, to kind of put some, together some information and that kind of thing so that we'll get to hear from the team, as we always do every year. But, you know, it's just obviously, I mean, it's an absolutely different kind of a year in every way you can possibly imagine it, for us here, for them there, for everyone on the planet. And so we're not in our usual rhythms. And so especially because of that, we just wanted to, in the meantime, make a commitment to regularly get on Good News and just give folks the news of what's going on there. Because, of course, even though things are, everything's completely out of its rhythm, they're still there every day, feeding 1,000 kids and doing everything they do to support the community. So first, I will tell folks that one thing about the coronavirus in general in Africa was kind of everyone holding their breath at the beginning to see, ooh, how is it going to go, right? Because there are a lot of factors that make it potentially even more complicated in the sense of, I mean, the way a country that has an informal economy like that, in many ways, it's very hard to pull off something like social distancing. Folks are often in close quarters. Just virtually impossible for most people to stay home and to make a living. And also, how many people have a compromised immune system for one reason or another. But I will say that so far, many of those things have not panned out as huge difficulties. So luckily, Zambia seems to be, they had a spike like everyone else in, I'd say, July. And it's coming back down. And so I think they've had a total of 1,500 cases there. And so it really hasn't done, what it's done in many other places, such as here. So that's been a huge blessing. And also, Ndola has not been hard hit. So Lusaka, which is the capital city of Zambia, has had most of the cases of the virus. So we've been lucky in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think the last time, you'll have to help me with this, Anna, because it's one of those when you're so in the middle of it, you can lose that perspective. But I think the last time we all checked in about it in this forum, we were hearing that conversation, that recorded conversation with Teresa Shridevi and me. And right. We were talking about that teacher from the school who had, out of the goodness of her own heart, had started to basically create educational materials that were going to be photocopied and disseminated. I think that's what we talked about the last time. Is that your memory?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it is. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so where we are with that, I just, we spoke with Teresa earlier this week, and so that teacher, Beatrice, not our Beatrice, but her name also happens to be Beatrice, taught Teresa how to do what she was doing. And so Teresa and Memory, who is another young woman part of the project and who lives with Teresa, they learned how to create these educational materials. They passed that on to Charles, Veronica, and our Beatrice and Malila, so our team of teachers. And they have now created the first of the materials for grades 1 through 7. They have photocopied hundreds of them and disseminated them throughout the community. Kids came on, what's today? Last Friday, I think they came and got the materials. And I will tell you one other thing, Anna, about it, which is so fun, which is that what they decided was it felt really important that there be an element of these are important materials. And so they charged a tiny bit of, they charged 50 ingwe, so the currency in Zambia is kwacha. Ingwe are like the coins. Mm-hmm. 100 ingwe and a kwacha. So they charge 50 ingwe, uh-huh. which is about like 1.5 cents for these packets, for each child, for these packets of material. And Teresa said it was so cute. She just saw kids like running through, "Mommy, Mom, I need a 15 Gwei. I need a 15 Gwei." And they feel like Teresa's really excited about that part of it because people are, they're giving the 15 Gwei. And, you know, that does a number of things. First of all, it gives the whole project a sense of responsibility for, you know, we're doing this. We're creating this for the community. The community, there's a sense of participation for the community. I think for the kids, to the best of their ability, that really ups their, okay, you know, Mom gave me 15 Gwei for this. This is really, this is important. And so what's extraordinary about it is they actually did just open schools. Schools went back on Monday. But what, of course, we've realized is, well, there is no reason to not do these educational materials basically for the foreseeable future. Because I think, as we talked about, even with the kids back in school, they're sitting in classrooms with 70, 80, 90 other kids, which is horrifying to think about for a number of reasons. But they, you know, they don't have, and they don't have any education. I mean, there's no books in the classrooms. They're not bringing homework home, and none of that. And so to have these materials is just, it's really, really fun to think about what that could mean in the long term. So I'll pause and let you talk for a minute, Anna.
Well, I was just taking in there that from what I'm hearing you say, that this is the first time these young people have had access like this to good quality educational materials.
Yeah, right? First time.
That they can take home, work with.
Yeah. And isn't it so the way of how everything that's going on right now that it's not that we couldn't have done that before. It's just no one thought of it. It didn't, because there wasn't the invitation of things lining up the way they've lined up for everyone to sit down and sort of, you know, hop from this place to that place to that place and then get to, oh, well, here's what we could do. And now there, suddenly this whole other door opened that's relevant not just during a pandemic, but for long after it.
Right. Right. And just how life unfolded it perfectly, right? That there was that one teacher who had this idea and made these things available. And then what a team. That team got together and learned the skill of creating these materials and so that it could be available to all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it really is. It's really amazing. Mm. So they are, and that's, you know, that's just the first installment. And I said to Teresa, well, how long do you think that will last? And she said, well, you know, Jen, I mean, I've told the parents, you need to go over it and over it and over it. I want this completely learned before you get the next set of materials. So what they're going to be doing is they're basically one step ahead of that. So that first set of materials has been sent out into the community. Now the team is working on the next set. And so they'll be doing all the grades again and getting those all set to go. And then once those are ready, the 50 in Gwei, which will then be used to, you know, make the photocopies of the next ones and on the process goes.
I love that. Just that clear training. Like, we're not just reading this once, right? We're going deeper, we're going deeper. And then when you've mastered this, then you can have the next batch.
Yeah, exactly.
As you say, all the ways go ahead.
No, all the ways that...
The team are so on it about instilling the value of this. You know, the charging the 50 Ingwei, the reinforcing that these aren't just to be read and then put down, right? That we're really staying with it. Yeah. We're really learning this.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think about that that's really what makes this project so special and unique. It's, you know, I mean, I know everyone's doing the best they can, but it doesn't tend to work well to bring in, you know, coordinators and leadership and that sort of thing into a community where they're not part of the community, you know? And so, and that's what happens most of the time, is that projects are run by people who, they may have absolutely the best intentions, but they're not from the community. And so they don't have their finger on the pulse in terms of how to make those decisions, which sometimes can seem hard decisions to make. Well, do we really want to charge people something for this? Do we want to And it would be impossible to make those good decisions unless you were right there. You know, the people making those decisions are the same people who are going to be, whose kids are going to be picking up those materials for 50 and Gui. Right? Yeah. You can't get more direct than that. So.
Yeah. So direct, so in touch with what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that happened fast, Anna. I don't know how we already got to the top of the hour, but so we'll have to do this again.
Well, how perfect, right? We get our next installment when the time is perfect for that, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jen. And
thanks, Anna.
We'll hand the show over to Michael and Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Anna. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi there. I enjoyed
that. So inspiring. Yes.
Yes.
I bet you did. So did I.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, Michael, what I was so struck by is that the sense of doing a good news on that project would be a big deal. You know, we would. There would be some breaking news that we wanted to share with everyone in Sangha and something that we were excited about. And what I loved about that conversation is simply that everything that's going on there is always remarkable. It's such a, there's a casual, the casualness of it makes it so extraordinary, right?
Yes, yes. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Actually, what dropped in just now is taking for granted. That we take for granted that they feed 1,000 kids a day, and you know, just like I tie my shoes in the morning or something, you know, it just happens.
Right.
But it's an extraordinary effort by an extraordinary group of people over a very long time.
And everything, you know, all the nuggets that Jen gets from Teresa on a call, you know, twice a week or whatever else. Every one of those she gets. To delight and we could do a good news update every week on what's going on in Candelumba, right?
Yes.
Because it would be the same way as all of us getting together and talking about practice, because intelligence is intelligencing in every moment and it's miraculous.
Yes.
If I'm reporting from that place, yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, no surprise to me that they adapt to the circumstances and are creative and willing and have a good attitude and have great ideas and then implement them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As Sherry always says, we learn so much from them, right? It's a reflection of practice, of what we do in practice from a totally different mirror.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Kind of like a different perspective on the same thing.
A different perspective on the same thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I have announcements here. Yes,
yeah, a calendar is filling up.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Zen stories are created to transport us beyond conditioned mind in delightful ways and have much to show us about how to embody the spirit of Zen. Join Sangha this Sunday, September 27th, in an exploration of your practice through the framework of these wonderful tales. The deadline to register is 12 noon Pacific time this Friday, the 25th. Three exciting group coaching opportunities are coming up in October. Practicing with Parenting, beginning October 2nd, we'll explore bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to parenting. Evenings with the Mentor, which starts October 14th, will support us in ending our day in loving kindness and presence. And Learning to Love Learning, beginning October 21st, will offer training in staying with love around any learning project. Coming October 4th, Sherry will lead a virtual workshop based on what she says may be the greatest spiritual practice book ever, To Kill a Mockingbird. The workshop will explore allowing the clarity of that which is to change us and in so doing free us from egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. In preparation, Sherry highly recommends that those of you who would like to attend the workshop listen to a recording of the book rather than read it and practice seeing how you are every person in the book. And Ashwini, I am looking forward to that workshop and really enjoying listening to the book.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's going to be wonderful.
Yes, yes. Reflective
and
listening.
I know, Michael, we're not going to have enough, you know, the 2 hours that the workshop is planned for.
Right.
It's going to be our first salvo into it.
Okay, great, great. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter starts October 15th. And is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up the Keeping Commitments Buddy Program, which begins October 15th. Participants will be paired with a buddy for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Well, I can just only say, wow. Now call that a full calendar.
Yes, yes, it is a very full calendar, and I'm going to be busy signing up for a bunch of those. And a few reminders for tonight's show. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes in length and on one topic is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready here.
Excellent.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. This is Aaron from New York.
Hey, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
What are you looking at in your practice?
Yeah, just to state first, this is my first time calling in, so this is really exciting for me.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. And I'm new to exploring this practice and finding lots of stuff to look at and examine in my life. I think the biggest theme for me is noticing how I retreat from social settings and retreat from dialogue and really pay attention to the voices in my head, editing what I want to say, telling me that, you know, I need to please the people around me and say things that are not going to be controversial or not taken well, and maybe I'll be perceived a certain way. So just these set of old voices that I know so well, but really have been able to identify now. So it's moving from the next step of that, you know, hearing them and trying to just say, no, not today, no thank you, I'm going to stay present and work on, you know, engaging myself and not retreating. And then, I mean, because in that retreat, I just feel myself being pulled farther and farther and farther out of whatever present situation I'm in.
Oh, Aaron, there's so many wonderful things. I mean, you're new to the practice, and where you are, what you're doing is to notice a process, right? That's what the tools of this practice assist us with. Because before, it would just be me thinking, I can't say anything, or I don't want to say anything, and identifying with that conversation. But to use the tools of this practice and step back and identify that that's the program, right? That's what the program looks like. It causes me to retreat. It censors what I say. it makes me believe XYZ, my mm-hmm. approval is external, I can now actually see the program for what it is and describe the program for what it is, and now I'm a choice about whether or not I believe it and act from it or respond to the moment. And the awareness yeah. that you're having, that as long as my attention is on the conversation, I'm actually being drawn into it and I act from it, rather than, and it's drawing me out of the present moment, which is where I yeah. want to be, from which awareness will have a conversation, rather than those voices having a conversation, rather than ego being your mouth, you being ego's mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's so interesting, even just calling into this built-up anxiety and being uh-huh. Put in queue and, you know, already
being
having
unmuted.
The voices. Yeah, exactly. Everything went yeah. haywire at that moment. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, just having that identification process already is so helpful. And I've noticed in trying to practice this and looking at these things, they so quickly just kind of melt away anyway. Once I've mm-hmm. kind of put my first foot forward, I know it's, or I've noticed that it's all been there kind of to set me up to not say anything. But once I'm in it, those feelings of anxiety and nerves really tend to dissipate away. Like I already feel it in my voice now. It's so much less shaky. Mm-hmm. It's so much less edited and contracted. So I think that's been the. But go ahead.
That was good. Well, I was just clarifying that point, right? Because what I project you're saying, or would you say that what's happening is attention is redirected, right? Rather than being
yeah.
on the conversation, you're here. And you can watch
yeah.
how when attention is here, there is no conversation, which from that perspective allows us to see that the anxiety is in the the anxiety is created by the conversation.
Mm.
That I'm only anxious when I'm listening to a voice telling me to be anxious or telling me that
yeah.
my experience is one of anxiety. As soon
yeah.
as I'm not listening to that conversation and I'm here, I could be perfectly articulate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
so wonderful to see, right? Because that's what freedom is about. I'm not controlled anymore by something that I don't know is controlling me.
Yeah. The freedom sense of it is huge, and just having that taste of it, it gives me so much more confidence, for lack of a better word, just in knowing that I'll be able to bring just what needs to be brought to each situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you make such a very good point, right, Erin? You're new to this practice. You're working with the tools, and there's such willingness to commit to the tool set. And then as you use the tools, you realize you have that direct experience of freedom, and that gives you a taste of knowing that, first of all, a motivation to practice using the tools, because it gives you more freedom and the confidence
yeah.
that if you use the tools, the freedom will be your experience. I mean, it's a very scientific process.
Yeah, and it feeds itself.
And it feeds itself. And in our lingo, in the daily recollection that we recite every morning, we say the practice of constant devotion and the practice of ever expanding faith. So when we bring attention and loving kindness to our practice, when we're devoted to it, what we get is the faith that it works. And the faith that it works makes us more devoted
mm-hmm.
to the practice. Yeah.
Mm. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. This has been really exciting for me to join in this way.
We are very excited and hope to hear from you again.
Yes, of course.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Erin. And Ashwini, I really enjoyed that part about how the sensations and anxiety are there to stop us from what we want to do. And then as soon as I start to do it, conditioning can't hold me back and those sensations dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it brings us closer and closer to the awareness that the anxiety is in the conversation.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And so we've got to Sorry, Michael. I think there's some kind of a delay because I was speaking over you. Is this better?
Yeah, you're great. You're good.
Yeah. Just that I persist despite what the voices are telling me. And then I have the experience that they can't stop me. And so then, you know, I get to see what I see.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And we have another caller here, Ashwini.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Carol in San Francisco. Can you hear me?
Hey, Carol.
Yes.
Hi,
Carol.
Oh, hi. Okay, great. I'm in the back of an Uber, and so if it's too loud, just let me know, and I'll try again another week.
Okay.
I have a question that I hope I can put into words. It's about recording and listening and about the various personalities that we talk about in the morning radio show. And so, let's see. Sometimes I think what I'm hearing described is that we're looking at aspects of ego, which would be, in my words, like the judge, the coach, I mean the main coach, or, you know, different aspects of self-hate almost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that we're also looking at aspects of that...
I missed the word, Carol. Can you say that again?
Oh, yeah. Aspects of a human that got maybe arrested at certain stages, like the first stage is trust versus mistrust in the stages of development, and then, you know, autonomy versus something else. And it feels like to me that sometimes those people that are recording are not self-hate, but they're just people that got broken off at a certain age and never progressed beyond that. And it feels like maybe that's who I'm going back for, not for ego and not for self-hate, but for the person that got cut off at age 2 or age 4 or age 6, to kind of go back and help them come forward into, I don't have the words for it, but does any of this make sense so far?
Yes. Well, let me ask you this, Carol. Do you have a sense of where your question is coming from? I mean, am I doing this right, or what is it that is sort of driving? What would the answer help you with?
I suspected that might be a question that would come. Maybe it won't make any difference, but it would help me to maybe go, yeah, perhaps are you on the right path is one of the pieces of it. Sometimes I just feel like I'm kind of out there on my own, you know, I'm not trying to figure it. I hate to use the word figure it out. And sometimes I just do it and don't worry about it and don't try to figure it out. But sometimes it does feel like a little bit of clarity is helpful on this process of recording and listening.
Yes. And so that's why I'm asking the question, right? Because there is an intuitive sense of the clarity that you're seeking. So that was what I was hoping to facilitate, the looking around. How is it?
I don't know what that means.
Give me an example. Does it? So, for example, when you're recording about, let's just say, what you call people who got arrested in a particular age or something like that, is your experience, okay, I see the person that I'm listening to sounds like they are 3 years old, and so what my response to them is a loving reassurance that I would give a three-year-old. Now, is that right? Is that how you're looking at this?
Yes. And I remember Sherry saying if they don't get consoled, then it's probably egocentric karma conditioning, self-hate, or some aspect of that. It almost seems like there's two different...
Uh-huh.
Forces that come up in this.
Yes, certainly. Yes, absolutely. And I project that that part of perhaps, and this is something for you to look at, part of what's sort of going on is the question arises for you, you seek guidance, and then you get facilitated around it, and you're able to look at, as you said, does it make a difference? Is it still helpful? In other words, what we consult happens to be the intelligence that animates you, right, in this discussion that we're having.
That's what I'm consulting.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in another setting, you could ask a question and I could give you an answer. We don't do that in our projects, right? You have a question arise, and we look at what do you see about it and what I see about it and where do we get to as a consequence of us having that exchange.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm looking for validation or something, which might be like looking for somebody to say, oh, yeah, your experience is right, and that's how it is for other people too, and so you're not off track, which probably maybe that's part
right.
of it.
Which is wonderful, right, Carol? Because in this discussion, you saw process. You saw the process that is behind that sense of, am I doing it right? I want, now we can look at that process that needs validation and go, well, if I got validation, then what? And we continue unraveling what's really here that I'm getting present to. Because you could do the recording with the person who wants to know, who's aware of that process for her, and explore what she really wants. And then when you switch to the left hand and the mentor responds, what the answer to the question that you're asking me will arise in response to why she's asking the question, and it'll be perfectly tailored.
Okay.
For her. Right?
Yeah, so looking at process, and as opposed to looking to have somebody say, oh, yeah, that's a really right experience to have when you're recording and listening, and then feeling like, great, I can get that from the outside. I don't have to get it from authentic, from life, you know. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, precisely. That, in other words, the conditioned process of getting validation gets revealed, and there's a way in which there's a training to turn attention to the wisdom that you are to respond to the question, and to know that you don't need it externally. That there's a way in which you can discover it. However you discover it, by turning the attention to the place where the answers come from.
Okay. And I feel so shaky in that area.
Well, something tells you you're shaky in that area.
About, you know, getting the answers from life. I'm hearing that, like, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen for you. But that's good to see, too, isn't it?
Precisely. And I don't know this, but I think that is the reason why the facilitation went to, well, you know, you turn to the mentor and ask for the answer, because there's a way in which, it's what we were talking about with Erin, we build the confidence that when we turn the attention to life, life will reveal something for us, and that we absolutely trust the wisdom, love, and compassion to be giving us the answers that we need at every moment. And what I'm training with is to turn to it, and to be present when I receive it, right? Sometimes that's easier to do than other times, but that is really my only practice, not to get it right.
Right, and not to give up when it's hard.
And not to give up when it's hard, and to call in and for us to do this, right?
Yeah.
To look for a mirror that assists me to see the process I'm in that I can't see, so that I can move back to asking life for the guidance that will be clear to me.
Okay, because I feel like, the process I'm in right now is the process of in looking for validation outside, which is a very common process for me, and also to not trust that life will be there And so mm-hmm. I think it will be fun to practice recording and right and left hand and let and just practice trusting that life will show up and
precisely. And you'll find out, right, Carol? And I know your practice well enough to know that you'll do it. You'll see what you see, and you'll call in and say, okay, Ashwini or Sherry, will you please tell me whether this is an aspect of ego and whether am I doing it right or whatever it is that you saw. I still can't see the answer. So can we talk about this some more?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's great, because I see conditioning will just limit it and go, you called in once and took up their time and that's enough. But no, that's really wonderful because life isn't limiting like that, you know. Life opens it up.
That's precisely right. So you'll do the recording and you'll see what you see about it from that process of, and then you'll get some sense of, okay, I have this notion about arrested development and sub-personality, and somehow or the other, in this process of inquiry and recording and listening and turning to life, somehow or the other, that will get answered too. Because if you'd said, okay, I'm a two-year-old, and I'm doing the two-handed recording with a two-year-old, it's such a limited structure to practice within. But if
versus
you record
what?
From that process of, I don't know, I really don't know what's going on for me, but I feel like I need someone else to say that I'm on the right track, and then you switch to the left hand and examine the process you're in, life will be able to respond to the process you're in, not to some theory that conditioning has about the process you're in.
Oh, that's great. I get it. That's wonderful. That does open it up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry it took
us
so long to get there, Carol.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You take care.
I hope you have a great night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Carol. And Ashwini, I really appreciate the process of calling in with something to look at and then exploring it and seeing what I see and going deeper.
Yeah,
that's what practice is, seems like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is, isn't it? That's it in a nutshell.
Yes.
It's a dialogue with consciousness in everything.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. And Ashwini, we are going to break here, and we're going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I wanted to remind folks that the Practice Recorder app is available for iPhone. It's great for recording and listening, and it's on sale in the iPhone's App Store.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure. Let me find our next caller here, just a second. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jodine in California.
Hey, Jodine.
Hi, Jodine.
Oh, good. You can hear me. Okay. Hi. Well, I had this kind of epiphany in reflective listening buddies today. Speaking of all our wonderful programs. And it kind of moved me forward in this kind of thorny process. And I'm at a new place about it, and so I would love some guidance about the new place. So what I was seeing was that there's a very thorny issue in my relationship with my partner, whereby if there's kind of something that needs to happen in our household or in our life together, et cetera, he almost always has a very strong opinion about kind of what to do. And I also have, you know, opinions about it, but usually not as strong. And I would say that, like, say 98% of the time, the decision, quote unquote, gets made via really what was like his preference that had really nothing to do with my preference.
Mm-hmm.
So now, so this is a setup for a lot of suffering. You know, if I have suffered a lot over this. But it doesn't go away. So my breakthrough today was, you know, just trying to kind of set out the situation and be reflected. You know, this is how it is. You know, 98% of the time, we do it his way. And maybe 2% of the time, we do it my way. And what I realized was that conditioning had me convinced that there was something really wrong with that.
Yeah. That what you saw actually is accepting the situation as is the first place to free yourself from suffering. And another way of saying it, right, Jodine, what dropped in as you said it is, you know, the conditioned orientation is somehow or the other we can solve this content in a way that that would resolve the issue, right? And what you got to was, actually, the decision I'm making is around whether to suffer or not to suffer, not whether I get to make the decision more often than he gets to make the decision or whatever the issue is about. That's
the real choice.
Right?
Yes.
Because if I'm solving for the problem, that's an ego position. I'm ceding my position. You get to do your position. I've got to figure out how to be okay and love you anyway, even though you get to do it your way all the time or whatever the conversation is about, right?
Right.
But what you got to is, okay, if I accept it, I'm not going to suffer over it. And that's really what I want. I want the suffering to stop.
Absolutely. And conditioning was always like pointing to, but the problem is it shouldn't be this way.
Yeah, that's right. Which is the process of suffering, right? That was the major breakthrough for you.
Yeah.
Is the situation, the conversation that makes this situation wrong, and either your fault or his fault, which is the self-hating piece, And who you are as a consequence of it, and how your happiness and satisfaction somehow or the other are tied up in this being perfect, that really is what the suffering is. And so when you look at it and go, well, I really don't want to suffer over it, then it's like I accept this is how it is. You losing interest in the karma is the best way to get over it, right?
Right. Like, what's actually wrong with 98%, 2%?
Exactly.
Exactly. You know, what's actually wrong with it? Exactly.
Yeah. Like, can you explain to me what's wrong with that? Because it actually relieves me of a lot of responsibility that I maybe didn't want.
So much energy I would project, right, Jordine? So you don't have,
yes.
You know, it frees you up to go, okay, well, that decision got made. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next layer of it that I realized there must be another knot to untie is there was a conversation about doing something, and he was asking me, you know, I want to do it this way. What do you think? And I'm like, well, I kind of want to do it that way instead. And basically, it was going in the same direction where we're not going to come to anything but his solution. And I realized that I was angry, or somebody was angry, and I asked him, you know, if you don't have any interest in my solutions to this, why did you ask me? And then he got angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like somebody—I don't know. It's like I'm not there 100% of the time, or I get pulled back into the suffering. I don't know quite how to work with. Mm-hmm.
Well, have you done the two-handed over there to just explore what the anger is really about?
Have I done it specifically on that? I've done a lot of recording and listening, and I guess I could the next, even if I have, I don't remember, so I can like start over there.
Yeah,
and do it
as
again.
Just as a way of seeing what's going on, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's just I think there's somebody there who there's somebody there, I think, maybe who sometimes is kind of attached to a certain outcome, and that, you know, because it's easy to let things go that you're not attached to, but mm-hmm. there are these attachments that come up now and then, and kind of like she knows she's not going to get what she wants, and she's mad.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Jordine, it'll be interesting to see what you see when you do the two-handed around it, because the same process could apply, right? That there's an attempt to see what's going on, what's really, whether there's a person, there's an attachment, there's having to let go of it. But if you brought the framework of whatever this is going to be brought into unconditional love and acceptance, because that's the context mm-hmm. from which the suffering stops, regardless of the solution to the content, then the container of the perspective is totally different, right? And that's what
as
your breakthrough from the first place.
Yeah.
Because it took you so long to work with it and explore it and diagram it and see the suffering and the voices and the projections and the beliefs and record and listen about it in order for you to get to the inside of, wait a second, all of my attachment to this clearly has gone away because it's been eroded. Because I can see, oh my gosh, the only thing I want to do is to stop suffering. I'm completely fine with 98% of the decisions being made by him, right? The content didn't change. He's not going to be any different. You're not going to be any different. And yet your relationship to the whole thing is different.
Wow. Okay. So I just shift the focus to ending suffering. And keep that my focus as this thing unravels.
That's right. And when you that's what you're doing, right? You're assisting that whole process to be brought into compassion for the sufferer to talk about it, the identification to be there, for loving acceptance to be brought to it, for compassion to say what they want to say about it. And it's a process of working through into acceptance from.
Yeah.
I mean, rescuing that place, let's just say, from suffering to unconditional love.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's a very stuck place.
Yeah.
So, great. Okay. I see my direction.
Yeah, it's what we're talking about with Carol, right? You want to see what wisdom has to say, because it seems that the intuition is telling you that there's nothing on a content level that's going to bring the breakthrough for you. But on a context and process level, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So
okay.
It's an edge, right, Jodine? Because that's not saying that you couldn't say, I don't know what this content is. Let's do it your way and my way. Or let's each do it our own way. You know, there's so many options on the table. In other words, you don't have to, it's not, we're not talking about what's the right content solves, right? Because at a content level, there are so many options. We're only looking at what's going on for Jodine that causes so much suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we bring that into conscious, compassionate awareness and release that suffering?
Right. Yeah, and you know what just came up is like, he shouldn't be that way. He needs to change.
Yeah.
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 So.
Which, if you want the projection, is really, you should be different too, right?
In other words,
the only thing that's operating there is the same thing that was operating. I should get to make some decisions. It shouldn't be this way. 98% of the time, he doesn't get to choose. How come I don't get to choose?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, you should be different.
Right.
Because it's whatever it is. And when you explore that with that content, with those words, and with that identification, it may seem very specific, but we get in touch with more than the content when we explore it in the context of bringing that into acceptance, right?
Yes, it's just a totally different focus than resolving the content.
Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
and the content often, like, it almost feels like the content doesn't matter at the end of, bringing awareness to it.
Precisely, because what you're interested in is ending suffering, not
right.
to make decisions 100% of the time.
Right. Right. Or even that little, right, and, like, what's going on with that little last thing that one person is attached to, and, yeah, so, okay, great, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jodi.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Keep us posted, huh? That's very interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. And Ashwini, I heard you say in that conversation, losing interest in the karma is the best way to get over it. And I found that really fascinating. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's great.
They're telling us all the time, you know. We just learn to ignore the voices.
Yes. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. It's Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Can you hear me okay?
You sound very, very far away from me.
Oh, okay. Let me... Is this a little better?
Much better. Much better.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. Well, it's been a great show so far. The one thing that I'm kind of looking at is stripping the words off of everything that's said and kind of like writing the tone of the conversation. And what I hear a lot in these calls is a lot of like willingness and enthusiasm and joy and just like a celebration of and gratitude. And it's like I at some points I don't even hear the words anymore. I just hear the tone underneath it. And I feel like I ride that, and it's contagious. And then I'm like, completely out of my stories and the dullness and the lullness of, you know, the repetition of conditioning.
That is such a beautiful description. Gabriel, I think, you know, Sherry often points to how you just need to put yourself in a Sangha setting and you'll be at center because of the exact process that you're talking about, right? We tune into the experience of what's going on, which is presence. And then
it's not really about the words, because we're dropping into the places that people are speaking from. You write the subtext, right? Which is, as you're pointing to, the words are irrelevant, but there's willingness and there's authenticity. That's really what is getting mirrored and reflected, the true nature that's showing up and participating and has so many labels, as you just pointed out, willingness and gratitude and courage and joy and connection and celebration. And if that's what my attention is on, that's where I'm at, not in the sameness in my head.
It just feels like the wind beneath my wings, like, and I can ride that and fly all the way to wherever this is all going, and it doesn't matter where it's going, because it feels really cozy and friendly and warm now. So it's like, why even wonder?
Well,
where
and
we're
that
going?
Is, yeah. And again, this is words, but I think that the answer to that is we're here, right? We're here in it.
It doesn't
have to go anywhere except bring us to this moment. This moment it's the experience.
I think conditioning hears here as like this static place, but here is like here. It's like this flow. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not this like one singular place.
Yeah, and that's such a good process to catch on to, right? The abstraction and the labeling and the limitation that the conditioned interpretation puts it on, which is one of the reasons why words can either trap or liberate. If a word tree makes you think of a tree in a particular way, you don't have any joy in that experience, right? Because you're not experiencing the tree. But if you're sitting in front of something that's waving wildly and has all these greens and different shapes of leaves and dancing in the sunlight, I mean, that is a completely different experience of a tree, which is what you're pointing us to, right?
Yeah. I think conditioning also hears it like an instruction. Like, what we need to do is drop the conversation and get here. And then conditioning is like, okay, I have to drop the conversation and get here. And where's here? There's there, and then there's here. And I need to get here. And all of that is just a way to keep you out of here. And it's such a subtle catch. But I feel like once you feel it, that's been my entryway into it. It's like I'm not trying to get here. I'm kind of sensing and feeling what here is, and then poof, it like here I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another way of saying it, right, Gabriel, is conditioning's not trying to get here. We're not trying to get here by doing it with the mind, right? The mind attempting to get here is impossible.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of the show.
Happy writing.
Thank you. You too, and everybody else.
Thanks, Gabriel.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. And Ashwini, the word that kept dropping in for me during that conversation was the energy, feeling the energy of presence. What does that feel like as compared to the energy of when I'm identified?
Yeah, absolutely. The energy of presence.
Yes. And we have time for at least one more caller here.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini and Michael. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. So I've been looking, or at least attempting to look at sleep, or what's going on around sleep, or lack of sleep. For decades, I've tended to wake up in the night and to be awake a fair amount of the night. And that tendency greatly increased when I became a teacher, 13 or 14 years ago. To the point that I would I just could not sleep, and I would, you know, in some cases, just walk for a few hours in the middle of night, sometimes because I could not sleep. And it is certainly better now, but I continue to be tired a lot from lack of sleep. Sometimes I've come to the monastery in the summer when that was possible and just realized how exhausted I was and how much I slept while I was there. I'm not really certain how to look at what is going on. The two things I am aware of are stress. Not that there's usually much conversation about the next day or anything, but I know that there is, you know, there's that fear about how it's going to go and so on. That is enough, I suspect, to be one of the things that's going on. Another thing is that I fall into fantasy, particularly sexual fantasy, then. I'm not trying to do that. In fact, I'm actively trying not to, but I'm not able to stay out of it. And then some of it is I don't know what's going on, and just wonder how to, you know, in that not fully awake state, how to pay attention closely enough to, you know, see what's going on, or any other suggestions you might have.
So let me ask you something, Jeff. Do you experience not sleeping as suffering? I mean, do you suffer over it? I mean, in the sense of, is there a conversation about the fact that you're not sleeping, and that's so you could just be all right with not sleeping?
Right. Yeah, there definitely is a conversation, and I think it's a similar conversation to what there is around health issues, just because I'm tired. So on practice calls or other, you know, or in meditation or other times when there isn't, you know, I'm not actively doing something, even though I'm interested, there's a tendency sometimes to nod off, quite often to be tired, to not like being tired, you know, in the evening when, you know, or afternoon or sometimes even the morning, but more often the afternoon, the evening when there's still stuff to do. So that's really, if the conversation basically is, if this were better, my quality of life would be better. I would be happier and enjoy and so on. So yes, there is a conversation of suffering.
And so around the tired piece, right? Have you experimented with the difference between being all right if you nod off and tired as a conversation? Because so your body needs to rest, and for some reason it doesn't rest when everybody says it's supposed to rest, but it might want to rest at 6 o'clock in the evening. And so you nod off, and then that's okay. There's something you pay attention to or bring acceptance to. And then to just notice, right, so there's a conversation about being tired, which is very different than feeling tired. That would be actually a really good place to start the exploration.
It's interesting. So what occurs to me in that, and this feels disidentifying, is that the conversation might not be in words, but it's kind of like the lens I'm looking through, that place of dissatisfaction. It appears that being tired when I've got things to do is inherently unpleasant.
That's beautifully stated, Jeff.
But what I'm getting and what you're suggesting is there might be what I'm going to call it an in quotes conversation that I'm not seeing. It's it's already in there. I may not be hearing any words about it, or maybe I am, but a lot of times I may not. But there still is that kind of slant or lens or orientation that this is inherently it shouldn't be this way. There's something wrong. I don't like this.
This is a problem to be solved, and I need to work out. I need to find the cause, and I need to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't like this experience.
Right. Oh, yeah. Even though intellectually I might have questioned that, I really haven't questioned it. If you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean, yes. Right?
Yeah, it's like, really question that. Oh, right, that might really not be true.
Right. And so, yeah, you take a 5-minute, 10-minute nap, and you're ready to go into the next thing in the evening. Right?
Who knows? Who knows?
Exactly. Exactly. But that in the persisting in the orientation causes the orientation to persist. Right? Resisting the orientation also causes the, and that prevents the exploration of, well, what's keeping me up? Or, that as you said, the curiosity and the fascination to explore this as a phenomenon, as a workshop, as the, this is what, it's what we're talking about with Jordine, right? There's a way in which if I accept how it is, there are there's a lot more pathways open to me to be with it than the only way I'm with it is dissatisfaction.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What I'm seeing too, and what you're saying is, if I start out with the idea that I need to solve this, I'm already in all kinds of suffering. But if I start out with, I don't know, and I'm just exploring, not particularly trying to go in any direction, I'm just, like if I was exploring the woods, but I'm exploring the woods because I want to explore the woods, not because I'm trying to get out of the woods or anything like that.
That's a very good analogy. Yeah, yeah. And precisely.
Yeah.
Yes. In other words, if we start out from the perspective it's a problem, we're in identification already.
Mm-hmm.
We're in dissatisfaction. We're just reinforcing it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how that idea had occurred to me, again, intellectually, but it's just somehow so unquestioned that there really is something wrong with this. And I hadn't seen that until this conversation. And it's like, oh, right. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. Right. And it is, again, that's the key, is unlocking that seeing that this, the belief, there is something wrong. wow, in this case, could it be possible that there's not something wrong? I had never really considered that.
Yes. It's that whole, it's the Zen story, right, Jeff, about the person who had practiced Zen for years and years and years, and then he comes to this teacher, and the teacher says, where did you leave your umbrella? On the left side or the right side of the shelf, or something like that. And then he goes, my God, I have to go back to the monastery for 9 years, right? Because it is that place of, I'm constantly trying to bring awareness to the layer I cannot see.
Right.
And the point is to bring the awareness to it, not to see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's another version of Jordine. I'm interested in ending suffering here, not solving the problem asleep.
Right. Because, what's the thing? The way to end suffering is to be in the process of ending suffering.
Yes.
And so exploring the woods is fun.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, and everyone.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. And Ashwini, that was a great show, and I heard a ton of curiosity in all of those conversations, as you were just talking about, not solving the problem, but curiosity of, well, how does this work? How is suffering maintained? What am I believing about this?
Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about that, right, those questions are allowing us to remain in the to remain in and identify and have attention on awareness, which is why this is an awareness practice.
Yes. Yes. And a practice of ending suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that too.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Ashwini. Go happy.
Go happy. Bye-bye.